Hello and welcome to Sleeve Notes with Ono Sullivan, the brand new music show where we take a deep dive into all things music. And we have a very special guest today, David Murphy, who's a pedal steel guitar player. And it's an exciting time because he has a brand new album out next week. And it's that was the track there that you just heard from it. Absolutely stunning. It's called Queen of Glynn. And it's one of your own compositions, David, isn't it?
That tune actually was a traditional tune.
Oh, is it? So, okay, yeah. Excuse me, sorry, yeah.
It's mostly traditional Irish music, traditional Irish tunes, historic tunes, Seanós or harp tunes, played on pedal steel guitar.
Yeah, and you've been playing the pedal steel guitar for, you know, how long now? I think I was talking to you before, maybe it was during your teenage years you took it up, was it?
It was much later, yeah. Well, I started playing guitar in my teenage years, and then in my early 20s I started playing pedal steel guitar. Yeah.
Okay.
And suddenly got addicted to it.
Yeah. And it's such a haunting sound as well, and I think people are, you know, everyone's familiar with it through like country music and, you know, kind of ambient music from like the likes of Brian Eno and that kind of stuff. So, and it started out like in Hawaii really, and it kind of segued into country music, and then it's kind of merging with the Irish tunes now as well. So how did you kind of decide to focus on Irish music versus maybe before when you were working with in the folk field, probably a little bit more, were you, or was it always have an Irish lilt?
No, you're right. Yeah, definitely. Like, I suppose I'm interested in lots of different types of music, as you mentioned, Brian Eno and ambient music, and I'm interested in a lot of folk music, be it Irish or English or American folk music, or further afield. But it was definitely something I wanted to do. That I knew I wanted to do something at some point to my own project, and I knew I wanted it to be, I suppose, something that was more from this part of the world, be it, you know, something that wasn't American as such anyway, which is the instrument is so associated with and obviously has its roots in. So I knew I wanted to do something that was part of, you know, my own identity or my own geography, you know, if that makes sense.
Has there been an Irish kind of music album with pedal steel guitar on it before?
Don't think so.
And a new niche is impressive, you know. Yeah. So
well, it's, you know, it's kind of a natural thing in some ways as well, because you know, as I said, I'm interested in a lot of music, and not just old folk music, but a lot of modern music as well. So there's been definitely a rise over the last kind of 10 years or so, maybe to do with streaming or whatever else for ambient music. I have an interest in kind of a lot of the modern classical music that's going on as well. So it seemed like a natural blending of all of those, really, for me. So
And like looking at the notes, obviously as well, like it was a very collaborative kind of effort as well. You've you've a double sided vinyl record out on Thursday, and you can pre-order that in Bandcamp at the moment. And so like you've a variety of like tunes, like traditional tunes from the likes of Sean O'Riordan. Padraig O'Riordan and Edward Bunting and Steve Cooney is involved. So like you've taken some kind of traditional Irish tunes and put them in a new context. And there's a huge amount of collaborators on the album as well. Like, you know, like even that in itself is impressive, just getting all these people together. And do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Like there's a mix of people there that I would have worked with before and people that I've never worked with before, which was lovely. So I think the cello player, Laura McFadden, I played with her before with a few Northern Irish bands, Arborist and Melodian as well, another Northern Irish songwriter. And I had said to her years ago, we should do something, you know, do a project. So she was really a catalyst, I think, for a lot of the tunes in terms of the arrangements. Definitely she, what she brought to it really kind of inspired some of the other players that came in as well and what they were doing. So, it was a nice mix. But big list of collaborators.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. As I said, some people then at all, you know, I'd never worked with before, like the two harp players, Aisling Irwin.
Yeah, the harp on that track there.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing. And even I see Peter Broderick's on the list.
Yes.
Is that, he's a phenomenal performer, yeah. And he's been in like the likes of Efter Klang, and he's been gigging around. I've seen him a few times over the years. I actually saw him maybe 2 years ago in Waterville in Kerry. Oh, yeah. But he's just a phenomenal performer. Amazing. And effortless, like, yeah. And such a, you know, he's fantastic, really. Like, and how did you did you just get in contact with him, or had you worked with him before? Or?
No, I'd never worked with him before. I'd known him just to say hello and really and bump into him here and there. And yeah, I had been a fan of his for a long time. I think his first gig in Cork was like 2007, maybe 2008.
Yeah,
I remember
yeah.
going to
yeah.
see him. Was it the Crane Lane or something? Was his first gig yeah. in Cork? And yeah, I went to see him every time he came back. And then he's since moved to Ireland, actually.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I got in touch with him. I knew there was, it would be something maybe that he might be interested in, and I mentioned it to him, and he said, "Yeah, cut me in." So it was just one track he plays on, but yeah. He did some beautiful string arrangement for the whole thing. And,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And performed it as well, and yeah, it was really magic to have him on it.
Brilliant. Yeah. And who else? There's like obviously I don't know all the names, but I recognize maybe Steve Wickham as well. Like
yeah.
there's some.
Steve's
some big names. So, like, who did you actually know beforehand out of the list yeah. of collaborators?
Steve Wickham, I would have played with the Lost Brothers yeah. quite a bit. And again, I mentioned it to him. He loved the idea. He loves pedal steel as well, actually, mm-hmm. funnily enough. I think they had a pedal steel player in the Waterboys for a while. So, yeah, I mean, there were certain people that I really wanted to have on it. Who else? Let me see. Mark McCausland plays a bit of baritone guitar. He's in the Lost Brothers as well. Neil O'Connor yeah. played a big modular synthesizer on one of the tunes, which was kind of cool. He is an electronic producer in Dublin. Okay. Somadrone, I think.
Yeah, I've heard of him. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think they were involved possibly with, you know, Redneck Manifesto
right.
and
yeah.
Jape.
Yes.
They were probably in exactly. that whole kind of scene, I think.
Scene.
Like,
exactly.
So, yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, Neil, I've done few projects with Neil in the past for his thing. So yeah, it was nice to be able to call on those people, and they were all enthusiastic. And as I say, the harp players, Alana Thornburg and Ashley Gerwin, I'd never worked with before. So I just reached out to them online and they were interested. Who else was there? Rory McCarthy, I think definitely.
Yeah, that's
the
pianist in
yes.
the jazz pianist in Cork.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah.
And like phenomenal. Yeah. And I was trying some parts myself on piano at home, and I played some piano on the album, but there was a couple of tunes that just really needed a really good, like,
yeah,
actual
a
piano
player, like, yeah, 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 as opposed to
yeah, yeah,
keyboard. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And yeah, got Rory involved, and just what he did was just phenomenal. And like what you hear there on that tune is yeah. Rory, and on a couple of other tunes as well. So yeah, really, really, it was really lucky to get those people involved,
yeah, yeah.
without a doubt, and an absolutely hugely collaborative
yeah,
effort.
Yeah.
It wasn't
but
just
even,
on me, you know.
Well, yeah, the logistics of pulling all those people together, though, you know, it's fair play. Will we take another tune from mm-hmm. it? So, like you were saying, which one did you wrote one or two of them yourself, or
One of them is my own, actually, just one. It's track number 6.
Okay,
And it's the title track from the album. It's Creed Niggling, and it is yeah, it's one I've
oh yeah yeah months. Yeah we'll give that a whirl. So thank you. Beautiful stuff there from David Murphy. His brand new album is out next week, and that was Cuina Glen. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's one of his own tracks. And obviously, there's the vinyl LP and the Bandcamp download options available all out next Thursday. And you have a couple of gigs coming up as well, Dave. Like, I know you've probably sold out Collins already, have you?
Collins, yep, Collins tiny.
I know, but still, it sounds good.
Yeah, Collins next Thursday, and then on the night before the release, Collins the 18th of April, and then doing an in-store gig in Rollercoaster Records Kilkenny on Friday the 19th, and in Plugged Records in Cork on Saturday the 20th.
Of April. Oh, yeah, so you're they're all coming up?
They're all next week,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, and then...
I might try and come. I'm away next week, unfortunately, so I can't make Collins, and it was sold out anyway, but maybe I'll try and swing by Plugged. Cool.
Brilliant.
And yeah. Will you have... a few people playing with you on the night?
Yeah. So so as you said, the logistics of getting people together is a challenge, mm-hmm. obviously. And look, doing the album was one thing, but as there was kind of an interest in doing something in a live setting, it became apparent that okay, I need to put a band together. And again, I reached out to a few people that I've never played with before, but that I would know around the locality. There's a nice little band put together. It's Ultron Lavery on piano, who plays with loads of people really around Cork. Niamh Dalton on violin, yeah. And Michael Reardon on double bass, and Laura, who played on the album as well, is going to come down from Donegal for that Collins gig. And then we have a few festivals over the summer lined up as well. So
oh, fantastic!
Either do them as a 3-piece or a 4-piece or five pieces as needed. It's lovely to be playing with new people, and also I think one of the things I said to them was, look, you know, I don't want to be a boss, like, you know, this is a collaborative thing. And put your own stamp in these tunes, and don't be confined to what was on the album.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's make them something.
You're not
going to
be finding them if they're over the time, like James Brown allegedly did. I don't know if that's true or not, or it's an urban myth. It's a good story either way. So that's I think when you're working musicians like that, you can kind of you're dealing with kind of probably high quality people. They wouldn't need a huge amount. They can kind of slot in handy enough as well, like, 100%. You know. So and obviously you've the logistics of getting the pedal steel guitar around as well.
It's a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay, but it's it's not like putting a fiddle on your back or you know.
Yeah.
You know, but it's fine. I think, you know, we'll do a few festival gigs over the summer, and as a 3-piece, it works fairly well. We have a good range. We can replicate a lot of the sounds in the album and stuff as well. So yeah, it's good.
Brilliant. And was there much of a kind of a lead in? You probably just had one or a couple of practices, and did you have to kind of?
Had a few.
And of course, you're juggling all this with a family and a day job as well.
Day job, 100%.
We're obviously in UCC here as well, and during lunchtime as well, in case any of our colleagues are listening.
We're not on the clock.
Exactly.
We've been having a few rehearsals over the last couple of months. Like, we meet up once a week for a couple of hours, and it's been good, and we have a kind of a nice set worked out. We're doing a lot of tunes from the album, and we're doing a few others as well that are totally different, you know, and not necessarily Irish music either. So that's been nice too.
Oh yeah, so are you fleshing it out with the previous releases as well, or are you doing a few covers? And
covers, yeah, yeah, just yeah. Other tunes, like we're doing, I won't give anything away, but we're doing like a Led Zeppelin tune.
Oh wow.
Which would be, how the hell does that work? But yeah, we're doing a couple of other unusual ones as well. So but you know, all within the same genre of what we're listening to there, you know, it wouldn't sound out of place. So
So
rearranged for sure.
So will we take another track from it? Which one would you
do you want to play that one with Peter Broderick maybe?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That's Eleanor Plunkett. It's an old O'Carolan harp tune from the
1900s. So we'll give that a whirl there now. So David Murphy, next Thursday, album's out, Bandcamp, go stream, go download. Get the vinyl. So here it is, Eleanor Plunkett. You're listening to Sleeve Notes on 98.3 FM. So we just had a track there from David Murphy, whose album is out next week. And that track was called Eleanor Plunkett. And yeah, it sounded absolutely stunning. So I was just going to ask David about, you know, how he kind of got some of those sounds or what process was involved. I know he was, it was mixed in Wayfield Studios in Clonakilty in Cork, but... Can you tell us maybe about your process, David, and you the collaborators, but like, and what kind of maybe gear, and because there's beautiful sounding reverbs, but we're not going to go, well, being honest, we are going to go there. We're going to talk about audio gear for a few minutes. So I'm sure there's enough people out there who will be interested. So spill the beans,
yeah,
David.
Sure. Yeah. Secrets. As I said, mostly, like, I record everything at home, so I had gotten nicely set up. I think I said to you before, when my son was born, it getting to studios was a real challenge. You know, I couldn't just head off there to a studio, whatever I needed to. And just the times that we're in, it's technology so good now. You know, it's worth having a setup at home. So I kind of expanded that over the years, and I bought new preamps, or, you know, secondhand gear obviously as well. But just started building things up bit by bit. And
Because it sounds very kind of roomy or reverby and kind of analog. It doesn't sound digital, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, you know, things have gotten so good these days that, like, it's nearly impossible to tell the difference. But, like, you know, when people think of audio production, they think of more synth-based, you know, as in, like, electronica type of stuff. Like, but, and this is very acoustic sounding. So, like, you had some nice mics, no doubt. And then plugins, you were saying, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, there's a mix of, obviously, like, all the violins and the cellos and everything are all acoustic instruments. And then for the pedal steel, I just generally record direct. I have a nice preamp that I have, which is actually a tube preamp. So if you think of it just like a head of an amp, there's no speaker as such. I'm using digital speakers. I'm using that Milkman tube preamp into a Golden Age mic project pre, a mic, Golden Age project mic pre, which is kind of a copy of a Neve desk. And then I have a Golden Age compressor as well. So that's all the analog gear.
Whoa.
And then the rest of it then is digital.
And do you use the preamp live as well then as well for plugging into PAs, is it? Or do you just...
Yeah, I can't.
Or is it mic'd up?
Do you know what? I have a Fender Deluxe.
Oh, you've an amp.
Deluxe. Yeah. Which I would use normally. But for these gigs that I'm doing, I have got another preamp as well, which is, it's a DSM is the company, but it's I can go straight from my pedal board to the preamp straight to the front of house.
Okay, yeah.
And then I can just use my amp as a monitor.
Cool.
But I can, at least then all the stereo reverbs and delays can be presented as I would want them to be in front of house with the stereo spectrum PA system.
That's cool.
So
I
used that for a gig recently and it turned out really well. So
nice one.
I'm looking forward to trying that. Yeah, it's getting really nerdy now.
I know. Yeah. And we're not done yet. And like you were saying about plugins as well, like, because that's a whole, obviously pedals, guitar pedals, we were just talking about how massive, you know, that is on, it's almost a joke at this stage. You know, people are into guitars and pedals. It's just this kind of geeky niche that people, you know, who are into it can't get enough of. And like you were looking up a lot of YouTube videos and in terms of like guitar pedals, were you using any of them? But you were using some Spitfire plugins, you were saying? I'm not familiar. I know.
Spitfire stuff is phenomenal. And like even some of the piano, I mean, what you can do now is unbelievable. People would sample their grand piano and and will then present it as a digital virtual instrument
that
people can buy, and they're playing those sounds, you know, that piano treated a certain way. So things like that I would use, definitely. And some of the synths I would have used as well, some of their soft synths, I suppose they're called. Guitar pedal wise, like I use a lot of the Strymon pedals.
Are they reverb pedals, is it?
And delay, mostly delay and reverb. And then, but not so much for this, for the recording, I would use, I think there's a few, I'm trying to remember the names now, but they kind of do the same thing. Got this very nice, you'll love this. It's from like Sweden. It's this like Swedish studio. I think it's ABBA Studio. It's Polar Studios in Stockholm or somewhere.
Polar Studios.
And they've actually done impulse responses of the chamber there, of their actual reverb chamber.
Wow.
And you can buy that now as a plugin. It's called Atlantis.
All right.
Atlantis Chambers Reverb or something. And that's all over the album as well. So I think when you're talking about the space. Giving away all the secrets here now, but
where it comes from. Who's a pedal steel guitar to hand anyway? So you know, we should probably talk about that as well. Maybe like the mechanics of that. You have to control it with your feet. But like all those plugins sound amazing. But it sounds like you actually went kind of quite you dug out those little niches as well. You know, like you did a lot of research finding that stuff as well.
I'm interested in a lot of that music as well. I suppose definitely the more modern classical stuff and the ambient stuff I'm really interested in, as well as the the old world pedal steel stuff as well. So yeah. It's definitely a mix centuries.
Do you tell your partner or wife that I'm really busy, I have to do research on all these pedals in here?
It's ongoing, she knows
yeah,
well.
Yeah. The pedal steel guitar itself, then of course that's the main bit of kit, and that's actually, you know, for people who wouldn't know, you know, you control, it's basically you have a slide that sits in your lap, effectively, or it doesn't sit in your lap, but it's like on a table. You use a bottleneck steel thing. You can explain it better, obviously.
You're dead right. Like it evolved kind of from Hawaiian music, so back in the 1800s, there was probably earlier, Spanish settlers brought their Spanish guitar, which is a guitar I think ultimately came from Spain way back. They brought their guitar and the Hawaiian people started playing it a bit differently. They started putting it on their lap, and instead of fretting with their fingers, they would fret with whatever they had, I suppose, a knife, someone said, or a bar or whatever it was, or a bit of glass, whatever was at hand, I suppose, back then. And then that became a thing of its own. And then in the early 20th century, there was a big Hawaiian music craze in America, and that Hawaiian guitar became electrified. And actually the first electric guitar was a lap steel guitar. Prior to the guitar that we know.
Yeah.
So it was definitely, at the time, it was more popular than the regular guitar. And then in the 40s and the 50s, it became more prominent in, it began to be used in Western swing music and dance music, I suppose, essentially. Yeah. And then that became, you know, hillbilly music and country music. And exactly. Yeah. And that's where it kind of had its evolution, really, that whole world.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And you actually control, is it the bend with your feet, is it? That's how correct. It works. Yeah.
So you can, so it's 10 strings. It's on particular model that I play anyway, and most people do these days. There's three pedals to raise the pitch, either a semitone or a full tone, and there's levers then as well with your knees where you can lower some of those strings as well. So you can lovely chord changes. You can bend notes into different chords and things.
Sounds great. And I actually think I was just thinking there, a lot of Irish people are probably familiar with it, say from the likes of, say, the Joshua Tree or something like that, or, you know, Daniel Lanois, he mightn't be, maybe he's not a quintessential player, but he definitely had some of the sound on some of those earlier albums for sure, didn't they?
Think so. I don't know if he played the Joshua Tree, maybe, or Unforgettable Fire, maybe
it could have been the one before it.
Definitely. And he was he came from a totally different perspective, and he tunes it like an open chord as well. But he does a lot of the kind of things that I've been doing as well, which putting it through synths and everything else.
And definitely. who would globally, is there, I'm trying to think of other bands now that maybe use pedal steel guitar that people might know of.
Definitely in the country world. Neil Young, you know, had loads of pedal steel. Who else? Joni Mitchell had pedal steel, Emmylou Harris. A lot of the American country stuff, it's definitely in the 70s and the 80s, and loads of country and Irish stuff obviously as well.
We kind of segue there slightly, but back to the actual recording then, you kind of brought all those elements together then that you recorded yourself and got friends and collaborators to send on to you, and then you sent it on to Wayfield Recording Studios in Clonakilty, which is kind of developing quite the name for itself now around Cork, and with Brian Casey and Sarah down there, so they're doing great work. Brian and those guys mixed it for you, yeah?
Yeah, well, I kind of mixed it mostly myself. I mixed it really largely myself, but then I brought it to Brian. I was a bit worried about certain parts of the mix that I didn't have the experience, dealing with a double bass, for example, or that low end stuff. But that's not to say, Brian definitely brought it all to a new level without a doubt. I mixed down, I suppose, stems of the each track of each tune. I had already predetermined what everything, I'd done all the editing and I had arranged everything and all that. And then sat with Brian for 2 days and we just finessed it, I suppose, a little bit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Without
That's
a
fast.
Doubt brought it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fair
so
play.
Yeah, the heavy lifting had been done, terms of all the tidying up things and all that. But without a doubt, Brian brought it to a new level, and he's phenomenal.
Brilliant. So we'll take another track. So any other ones you'd like?
Maybe the last track might be the next one. It's totally different again. It's
On Speck Shogun. Yeah. So this is Edward Bunting, and it's arranged by Steve Cooney. Mm. So it's his arrangement of the tune. Is that what you mean there? Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, it was interesting. I had been chatting to him, and I told him I was doing an arrangement of this tune, and that I loved his arrangement, and I was pretty much going to record it as per he did his recording of it. And he said, well, he actually got it from someone else.
All right. Yeah.
From Liam O'Flynn, I think he said he got it from. So yeah, it was.
Excellent. All right, here it is on Speck Sioikuk. That was Speck Sioikuk there from David Murphy. And we're just chatting about his new album that's out next Thursday. It's available on Bandcamp. And what's the handles there? Do you want to get your social handles and all that kind of stuff?
Trying to remember them.
If you just Google David Murphy pedal steel guitar, he will come up, and he's got his own website. But Bandcamp is the main kind of selling.
Yeah, that's right, David Murphy Music, Bandcamp.com,
And we talk now about the collaborators and the recording process, and but there's actually there seems like there's a lot of kind of history involved in some of the concepts as well, of the titles and the tunes, and obviously you have some old Irish tunes as well. Like, so do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Like, I think just kind of the project kind of started really with just me messing around, just learning different tunes on the steel. And I think the first one was the opening tune on the album is Aisling Gael. It's like a Sean Arida tune, probably predates that even more. But
Was the professor of music here at UCC?
Great.
Was that just coincidence, or did you, or you know?
I knew the tune and I knew familiar with his material. Yeah
you just thought, why not? Yeah.
And it was nice actually. I went to Gaeltacht actually in Coolay when I was 12, and that's where I first picked up guitar. So it was kind of nice to. Made me think that'd be a nice opener.
Sure.
Maybe for the album. So. The material is kind of a mix of. So once I started kind of, I had a couple of tunes figured out, and I was thinking, oh, well, there's probably a concept here. There's an idea here. I'd love to explore it a bit more. And yeah, before I knew it, I had kind of 6 or 7 tunes just figured out in the pedal steel, and I thought, okay, I'll record these and see what happens. And I was very lucky. I got funding from the city council to put it together, a project award. So without that, it wouldn't have been possible to do it on the scale that I did it, obviously.
Yeah, because it's a proper production. Like, you know, you've, and you can hear it too, you know, you can hear the quality going through in the playing and the sound, like, so, it's fantastic. Yeah.
The material, just kind of, once I had 5 or 6 tunes even figured out, I thought, well, okay, I need to hunt for a few more. And that last one there on Speak Shogok was one I had heard Steve Cooney do, which I loved. Some of the tunes obviously don't lend themselves well at all in pedal steel. You know, the guitar is such a different instrument, or the harp is such a different instrument, but there are similarities as well. And even some of the harp tunes, I just found they worked really well on pedal steel. And it just wasn't something that had been done maybe by people that aren't Irish. You know, maybe it needed an Irish person to hear those similarities.
Bridge the gap, like. Yeah.
So,
and like, there's a couple of, like, say, Kitty Nukuman, trad arrangement. Like, some of these tunes must be going back years, are they? You might be aware of it, or how old are some of the tunes?
Exactly. Like, that Eleanor Plunkett, like, it's from the, I guess, the late 1600s or 1700s.
Well, yeah.
Kitty Nukuman was one that I was hunting for tunes, particularly around Cork. And there's a great archive, the Alan Lomax archive.
Yeah.
So he came to Ireland, in the early 50s, and he recorded. You could arguably say he was responsible for the whole revival of Irish music in the 60s, in that he kickstarted a lot of that. He discovered a lot of the great blues singers in America, and recorded them, field recordings in prisons and in fields and everywhere. He came to Ireland in the early 50s, and he recorded that tune in particular with a singer in West Cork, near Bantry. And it's there online for everyone to hear, which is amazing. And I just thought that would be a nice one to try, and I figured out the melody, and that started that one. So, you know, to me, it was an interesting period, I suppose, the early 50s. You know, there was nothing like what we have now in terms of traditional Irish music, the preservation of it, or the knowledge, or the, you know, curating of it.
Oral and spoken word.
Completely.
Tradition. Like, and that's pretty fascinating, because, like, you're kind of coming, kind of returning to your Irish roots, I suppose, as well. And that kind of, there's definitely a movement kind of going on at the moment of kind of bands that are kind of incorporating, I suppose it's always been there, but there's definitely a wave of it at the moment of Irish artists who are maybe fusing, you know, their influences, world music, rock music, all that kind of stuff, with the traditional. So, and you're doing that here as well. So, like, it's very cool. You're getting to explore that world, but you're saying you weren't. I was kind of surprised. I thought you had a background in trad as well, but you don't. You're just kind of coming to it fresh.
Not really.
But that's interesting too, I think. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've always loved listening to traditional music, and I used to go to the Baltimore Fiddle Fair every year, and I used to.
So you were immersed in it. Like, you mightn't have been playing it that much, but you were immersed.
Didn't play it as well, because I think I kind of revered a lot of the guitar players as well, and I was like, well, I can't do that. So, you know, there's a bit of, you know, let's not go there because I'll never be able to do justice to some of those, what those players do.
You mean some of the Irish trad guitar players?
Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal. It's a whole different, it's a different world completely. But I listen to a lot of it. And I suppose, as you mentioned, there's a lot of different interpretations of Irish music nowadays, you know, like the gloaming, for example, over the last 10 or 15 years, or what the stuff Martin Hayes is doing or Eardar Leonard is doing. It's all very much, you know, it's very forward thinking as well.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Still has a, you know, a foot in the past as well.
Yeah, I think the likes of, you know, Lancome and those guys as well, and John Francis Flynn, there's that whole scene where it's kind of getting people, it's kind of, they're getting an audience outside of Ireland as well. And, you know, the Irish language hopefully is seems to be kind of getting a bit of revival as well. So that's, that's all good. So the timing is good of this album. So yeah, we've time for one more track, but so you're listening to Sleeve Notes on 98.3 FM, and we have David Murphy here, and next week on Thursday the 20th, is it? Well, no, that's Thursday, the Gig and Plugged, isn't it?
Gig and Plugged is Saturday the 20th. Yeah.
Saturday the 20th.
And 6 o'clock.
And Collins is sold out, so tough luck, people. Go to the next one when Dave is around. I'm sure it'll be...
Probably be next.
Don't rule it out. Don't rule it out. You never know. But like I'm sure like there'll be plenty of gigs coming up, and you're playing the Folk Festival during the summer as well.
Yeah,
and
Dublin Folk Festival and Galway Folk Festival and Kilkenny Arts Festival.
Yeah, yeah. So like, so support local and Irish and UCC music as well, of course, and get out there and buy this fantastic album, and we'll finish up with this track. And thanks very much, David, for coming in.
Thank you.
And into such a deep dive, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and we hope you did too. So, like, this is one final song to see us off. Which one would you like?
Maybe Bridget Cruz, track number 2.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye bye.